Hey, friends, and welcome back to another episode of Women Over 50, A Life Redesigned. I am Shelley, your host. I am so glad you are here with me because I have a fantastic guest, Elizabeth Green. It was just a fun conversation that sort of went all over the place, and I just loved chatting with her. But hey, before we get to our episode with Elizabeth, we have a YouTube channel. I'll drop the link down below in the show notes. Sometimes we put all the videos of the interviews up there, and sometimes I just leave stuff in. So it might be a little different than what you hear today. Okay, about Elizabeth. Here's what she says. She wrote a book, not in the script. When you're the black sheep of the family, you've got nothing to lose when it's time to finally be heard. Elizabeth Green was born in Croydon, Surrey, and it is the never-heard-of sister of shamed British billionaire Sir Philip Green of Top Shop. Her memoir, Not in the Script, is very much an open book on her life, family, and constant search for love. It is a chance for her to finally have a voice about who she is at 72. Elizabeth believes 70 is a new 60, and she is still looking for a serious boyfriend in New York City. After she learned that first she had to find love in herself before she can love someone else. Okay, on to my interview with Elizabeth. Well, I am super excited to have Elizabeth with us today, Elizabeth Green. She's written a book that she sent me that I have been reading, which I absolutely love this book. You call yourself the black sheep in the billionaire's family. And there are several parts in this book that I'd like to talk about that really struck me. But one of them was at the very beginning of the book when you and your husband, I believe it's, you're deciding on how to celebrate your anniversary, is that correct? Or some special event? And you just said, when he said, what do you want to do? And the words just flowed out of your mouth. You're like, I don't know. I think I want a divorce. You know, so that's what really, you know, really struck me with the tone of this book. But it's a great book because I think it's just like having a conversation with you. You know, you're just telling us bits and pieces of your life. And then another really, to me, it was a heartbreaking part of the book where at the end of the book, you're being shown a screening. And when you asked to sit in a particular place, they told you you're not part of the script.
Oh, well, that was my mother.
Really compelling. So what does it mean? What does it mean, the black sheep in the billionaire's family? Why are you the black sheep, Elizabeth?
I guess from my mother's point of view, not so much mine, but they were interested in money and making money, and I wasn't going down that route, and they kind of nailed my foot to the floor. They showed no interest in me at all, and then they said, why don't you make something of yourself? So, and then they went, see, look, you didn't do anything. You didn't make anything of yourself. It's like, well, guys, you know. So it's kind of like it took a long, long time, but this is my moment. So that's what I mean. I went to India, as you read, if you got that far, and I guess I'm a bit of a hippie at heart, and I guess I still am on a certain level. And I have lots of things that interest me, and I've just tried my hand at business, actually. I've just closed the restaurant. It's funny because I was thinking every time I do a podcast, it's never the same. I literally just yesterday closed the restaurant.
Oh, I received an email, I think, from maybe your publicist who had told me that. So I'm sorry to hear that happened.
It was a bit of a, as my friend called it, an albatross around my neck, and we weren't making the numbers. And
yeah,
done. On to the next thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, things don't kind of stay the same.
So when you say your family wanted you to make something of yourself, what did they mean by that? I mean, I'm assuming it was their standards of.
It would look that way. I mean, you must have got to the chapter where I actually used my brother's name, spoke to the Jewish Chronicle, the newspaper in London, and said, "Can I write something?" Yes, I wrote something, and I always wanted to be a writer, always, 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 and I was so excited. And I said to my mother, can I put it on the wall? And she says, yes, when you achieve something. So for them, like anything in the arts wasn't really, mm-hmm. wasn't achieving anything. And it was funny because I went to a really fancy girls' school in London and I had a place at university, but I didn't get the grades. And normally, and I've been through this with my own kids, you'd ring up or you'd call, you'd say, da, 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 can you help us? And, da, 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 and you'd look at, I didn't get in, was just left, you know, so I didn't do that. I went to a polytechnic and got a really not much good degree and really didn't give it much attention, but it was just something to fill in the time. Yeah. So yeah, I just took a very different path to, I don't even know if they had expectations, but I certainly didn't follow his path in any way, shape or form. And again, in big businesses, like with Branson, Richard Branson, say, his kids are in the business. People who are, I was not wanted in the family business. I was not included. I wasn't invited. So it kind of didn't work both ends up, if you like.
So what was it about you that, I mean, you know, that you obviously didn't live up to their standards and never made anything of yourself, but I say that jokingly, but I lost my train of thought when I was going to ask you, Elizabeth. What did they want you to do exactly? I mean, I asked that question because I think we all, regardless, like I was the black sheep of the family, but we were dirt poor. So I myself have never made anything of myself, even though I was the first person to graduate from college, you know, and I'm doing all these things. It's the exact same thing, you know, for me, except I wasn't in the family of a billionaire. And I never really knew to this day what my parents were both dead, but I never really know to this day what my parents thought, what they wanted me to do, what they expected of me. I was just the black sheep because I couldn't conform to whatever they were.
Well, it's quite a long, it's like when I, so we moved house when I was 8, we moved to North London. It's quite a divide. North London is the posh, rich, much richer area. South London, that's north and south of the River Thames. That's the, and we started off in Croydon in Surrey, which was South London. And when I was 8, we moved to North London. So we lived in the Jewish area. And I, as in the book, you know, my mother said, if they ask you if you want to go to Jewish or non-Jewish prayer, say Jewish. What are you talking about? Didn't know, found out. So obviously, and she sent me to the very nice girls' school, but kind of education wasn't so important. And for my brother, definitely educating women was definitely not important. So going to university, going to college, studying, reading books, that kind of wasn't really on the cards. And that's what I wanted to do, read books and do things like that. But the bigger piece was that they weren't terribly interested in me. My father died when I was 15, so it was me, my mother, and my brother, and they weren't that interested in me. So I just was kind of left to my own devices. You know, I went to school and did my homework and stayed home. And I think when I was 15, I went to the Jewish youth club on a Sunday, and my father used to pick me up. You know, we had I was 15 when he died, so we hadn't had that much interaction. Mm-hmm. Weirdly enough, because he had migraines and he was always ill in bed, or I don't know, all sorts of things went on that I wasn't party to. It was kind of like I had no idea what my family were doing. It was the funniest thing. They just did their thing and then I was kind of over here. But the thing that made it difficult when you say the billionaire and blah, 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 was money always came into play. Mm-hmm. And I think the difficulty is people think when you've got money and you're privileged, as you saw with two people who were interviewed this week, what could you have to complain about? You've got everything you need. But if you have no emotional support, no emotional input, no interest, no nurturing, all the money in the world can't buy those things.
Yeah, there was a statement in your book that you, and I'm probably going to misquote this, but because it was last week when I read it, but that you grew up in a cold environment. But
that was the first line. I was brought up in a cold climate, and I don't mean the weather.
Exactly.
Kind of tells you everything you want to know. Yeah.
Yeah, and I agree totally, because I did not see the interview that you're referring to. I think probably Perry and Megan that you're talking about. But yeah, I agree. I think people think, you know, you have money, so therefore what your life is golden. What in the world do you have to complain about? But regardless of the amount of money that you have or your family has, if you do not have that emotional and physical support from them, what does it matter? I mean, obviously money doesn't make you happy.
No, you can be more, it makes you more comfortable in unhappiness. That's
wow, that's a statement.
It doesn't change everything. Obviously it's nice to have clothes and a roof over your head and but you know, and you were probably far more go-getter than I was, because you didn't have any money, so you knew you had to go out and do something and get on with it. Whereas I was in this sort of false comfortableness where there wasn't so much at stake, and they were kind of, it's so interesting to look at it, the further and further away I get from it, I can see, you know, when I was in it, of course I couldn't see Zim, but they kind of held me back in a way, and they, there was disinterest, and they possibly held me back. You know, oh, you don't want to do that. My mother was, oh, you don't want to go out with that guy. Oh, that, nobody's, you know, he's not good enough for you, but you're too good. Oh, it's ridiculous. You know, it's like interesting that I survived, really. But somehow I've got some sort of grit or determination, and some intuitive part of me must have known there was something better out there. And then I went on this 300 and 200 and whatever it was page quest to find it.
Yeah. So you're in New York right now, correct?
I'm in New York. Yeah.
Yeah. So what are you doing? I was peeking at your website and some of the articles, and yeah. Well, I'm always curious about my guests. So other than the restaurant, you are like talking about dating men, finding love and all those things. So what else are you doing in your life right now that I think that would motivate the listeners to go out and have some fun or create some?
Well, I'm kind of living my best life, and I never thought I'd say that. I always hid my age. I always didn't put it on website and on dating sites. I took it down 10 years because I could get away with it. I have much more freedom here, and I realized after I came here that, first of all, I don't have to see the family mentioned in the newspaper every day. I don't have to feel left out that I didn't get invited to, you know, when they went to some illustrious party and so-and-so illustrious performer played. So yes, they gave me some money. Yes, they helped me start the restaurant, but they never came by or near it in all the years I had it. And they were in New York because he had a business in New York. Mm-hmm. So no, it was really just get on with it. I always called it my hush money. Oh my God, it's terrible. But it felt like that. What was the question?
Well, you did say in the book you were a nuisance. So.
Oh, yes. He says to me, when I haven't spoken to him for a little while, he says to me, you know, when are you going to behave yourself?
Yeah.
And when you have a lot of money, it's about control, and you want to control everything and everybody. And I didn't want to be controlled. That's really what was going on.
So, I didn't mean to interrupt you there. That just popped out when, you know, they didn't want you to come to things.
No, because I didn't quite answer your question, but I mean, is about, okay, we'll get back to it.
Yeah. So you're doing all sorts of things now. What does your best life look like? What does living your best life look like for you?
Well, I'm just winding up the restaurant. You know, there's people still crawling around for money, and there's a few bits of money I can pull in. I've actually got something up my sleeve, which I'm not going to go into yet, but there's always the next thing. You've just got to be open. You've just got to create it. I mean, I was lucky. My brother had this really iconic clothing business called Topshop, if you've ever heard of it. There was a store in Oxford Circus in London, and it was really, people would say to you, I'm going to London, I'm going to Buckingham Palace, and I'm going to the Tower of London, and I'm going to Oxford Circus Topshop. And it was kind of on that level. And when I was leaving New York on a trip, I would phone them up or call them because I knew them, and they had a personal shopping styling, and I would make an appointment for the day or the day after I arrived, and I would go and see them, and it was the best fun, and it was the most fun. So, oh crap, what were we talking about?
What did you ask me? You're living your best life.
Oh, so I was very lucky. I had great clothes and I didn't dress my age. And I went vegan now, which was part of the impetus in starting the restaurant. But I've always tried to watch what I eat. I don't drink alcohol anymore, not because I am any, I want to be in control. I want to know what's going on. I want to see what's happening out there.
Yeah.
So, you know, the fact that I now publish this book and I'm 72, what's to stop me?
Well, I have to say, you, when I saw your age, I was, and looking at you now, I'm like, no way you're 72. You look fantastic.
Well, thank you.
You look fantastic.
I did have a little help, but.
Well, I think too, a lot of it's your attitude. You just seem to have, and from in this book and your adventures and things that you talk about in the book, I think you just have this attitude about you. Like, life is, you're going to do what you want to do now.
Absolutely. You know? And you know, I have a little bit of money. I sold my house in London, so I'm not like desperate. No, I'm going to find something to do, whatever the next thing is to do. And I've got a few co-conspirators and I'm going to be cooking something else up.
I like that term, yeah. Co-conspirators. I usually say partners in crime, but I like the term co-conspirators as well.
And I've also actually started writing something else about being a woman in business in New York. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, not easy.
Oh, I can only imagine.
Not easy.
How tough that would be.
And I don't think I had, except from men I was dating, whatever went on, but I didn't have the experience of being talked down to in that sort of way till I got here and got into business. So it's been I spoke to my landlord yesterday and he's keeping my deposit and blah, 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 blah. And he said to me, he came over on Saturday with his wife, the day before we were closed, I don't know, near to when we were closing. And I actually gave her a book and I signed it. She said, oh, I'm almost in tears. That's so lovely. And he couldn't wait. He's like opening the pages and looking. And yesterday I said to him, I don't know why you're keeping the whole deposit. I don't think it's very fair. And he said to me, it's all right. You can write about me in your next book. I said, don't worry. I have already. Don't worry, Jerry. You're in there. Because what happened was it became sort of people-centric. So I did a chapter about this person, a chapter about this. That's how it kind of evolved.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's my time to be bad. I mean, all those years you spend trying to conform, and if you're someone who doesn't want to, it's painful. It's awful.
Oh, yes, it is. And I had a guest on recently that talked about that, you know, we're domesticated. You know, like we have these attributes as kids about us where, like, you know, most of us are free and we don't give a crap. And then we turn 10, and from like 10 to 50, we're like domesticated into this way that we're supposed to act. And then we realize that that's not how we're going to be. And then we just sort of go like I sort of went berserk when I was 40. I mean, the things I did, you know, because I just felt finally free to be able to do some things.
So I read a little bit about you. What did you do? You were in finances or?
Well, I do lots of things. My main focus is I am a fundraiser. I raise money for nonprofits. Mm-hmm. Is like my main focus. And then I also work with women over 50 to help them redesign their lives, because I went through this major life transformation when I was 50. So that's what I'm super interested in doing right now, is helping women do that. So have you, I also read about your restaurant, and I'm a vegetarian on the verge of becoming a vegan. So what, have you always been vegan, or is that just something that's?
No, but when I came, when I came back from India, I ended up going to a homeopath, if you know what that is. And I lived there and worked there for a couple of years. And then I always took homeopathic remedies. I went to acupuncturist. I always was kind of interested. And then I was always wrestling with the last 10 pounds, trying to lose it. And so I mostly was like, no wheat, no dairy, no sugar.
Yeah.
And the less you eat of that stuff, the better you feel. So when you actually eat it, it's such a shock to your body. And then the restaurant before it was planted was a fish restaurant called Seabird. So I would eat healthy and I would eat lots of fish. And I went to a meeting one day and I was talking to somebody. She said, oh, well, if we eat fish, you might as well just eat everything. And I went, oops. So I stopped the fish. And it's easy now. I didn't even eat the plant-based meat that we had in the restaurant because the texture was too like meat and I didn't like it. So I don't know. And we're so upset. I'll tell you the best thing because somebody wants some. The thing I love about vegan is so great. You have to figure out what to eat every day. You're going to have vegetables, fruit, grains, pulses, nuts, the end.
Uh-huh. Exactly. Exactly.
All that agonizing's gone, done.
Yeah, and I found I've become much more creative with vegetables than I ever have. So, or I just like eat an orange, you know. I'm just like, I'm hungry, I'll grab an orange.
We did actually have some lovely vegan dishes, but I've never liked coffee, don't like it, don't like the taste. So that was no hardship. Hate milk. And then, God, they heard me and they brought out almond milk and oat milk and all these fantastic things. So... it's kind of like I had this auction the other day and in my head I said, this is how much we're going to do. And we did exactly, I didn't get it all because he took his commission and everything, but I said, we're going to make this amount. We made that amount. And I created something else a few days before that. I said, this is going to look this way and it looked that way. People don't know. And I mean, I don't mean to be woo-woo, but you actually can create what you want.
Oh no, exactly. I agree totally with that. And I think most of my listeners agree with that too. It's just, they don't know how to put that into practice. You know, we can talk about that, but I like what you said about just go out and I preach this all the time. You know, women are always like, I don't know my purpose. I don't know my mission. I don't know my passion. I'm like, well, you've got to go out and find it. You got to go out and cultivate that, you know?
Yeah. And I can tell, obviously, if you raise money for non-for-profit, you like talking to people. And you're good at enrolling. I mean, I never walk around saying, but I'm good at enrollment. I'm really good at enrollment. And the person I was just with in the restaurant, apparently, and who never, ever stopped talking, would talk to the guests and talk their hind legs off, said to me, oh, she didn't like it. I talked too much. It's like, coming from her, that was great. you know.
No, I like having conversations with people because you learn so much and it broadens your horizon.
Oh my God, I've met some great, great, great people. I really, really have.
I was
just going to say, I haven't totally honed my social media skills, but I was with my social media guy came along just as I literally shut the doors and handed the keys over. And we went and had a cup of tea in the West Village, which is quite hip and nice. And we were sitting there and we did this little video because I said, oh, we should do a goodbye picture. So basically we did a little video of us taking our masks off, sticking our tongues out, putting the back tick. That was my goodbye video. And I posted that and I just put free at last. And whoever got it. And whoever didn't. That was it.
I love that. So I'm gonna tell you a little story here. When I was 40, I was at a little cafe in this little town here in Missouri where I live. And I thought at 40, like I was the bomb. Like I was just it, you know. And I heard these two women talking. I think they were probably in their early, late 70s, almost 80. And I hear one of them say, well, you know, they were talking about their daughter-in-law. And she said, you know, when I was 50, I didn't really know anything either. And I'm like, what? Because here I was 40 thinking I knew everything, you know. But then to hear these women in their 70s, right now I'm almost 59, but to hear these women in their 70s talk about how when I was 50, I didn't know anything either. So you are now in your 70s. When you look back on your 50s, can you just see where you have grown so much, you know, are just an entirely different person now. for those of us who will soon be your age?
I think it's about, I don't know if a whole lot has changed so much, but I think it's about giving yourself permission. And I had an upset with, it's about being self-expressed, not in a way like, oh my God, why did you do that? You're really hurt. Not that, but just saying, I'm hurt. I didn't understand what you meant. I didn't know why you said that. Can you please let me know? It's just keep, that's in a way where my writing comes from. It's just like, I want to tell my truth. So how you learn to know things is by, you keep seeing yourself out there, like being bounced back. I was listening to, I did a radio show from England. I found the guy on Facebook. He knew some really good friends of mine. It's called the Men's Radio Station. I don't know if it's on my website. And they were talking about mental health this morning. And they were talking about people's reactions to Harry and Meghan's interview. And I said, Meghan is like me out there. And that's what you start to see. You know how you go through life, you feel persecuted and you're upset and people don't like you and all that stuff you make up in your head. When you start to open your eyes and you start to look, it's like, oh, has that been going on all the time? And I didn't know. Oh my God, look at that. I went skiing. I didn't go skiing until I was 51. It was bloody hard work. It nearly killed me. And I remember we went to this gorgeous place in Italy and you go up the mountain. We were right near the Austrian border and you go up on the chairlift or the button lift, whatever it is, and you get to the top and there's this cafe, there's this restaurant and it's sunny and people are all sitting in their t-shirts, sunning themselves and you're drinking these cocktails. And I go, oh my God, has this been going on all this time without me knowing? What the hell? I mean, I think I mentioned that in the book because by the time I skied down, I needed to have these drink. They were called Bombardinos.
Oh yeah, I do remember that. Yeah, I do remember that in the book.
Yeah. That was the first time I ever went skiing. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of, you know, when you try something new, it's like, wow. So obviously, you know, my body won't quite do what I want it to anymore, but try things, do things. Anything's possible.
Yeah, I preach that all the time.
We have restrictions on ourselves and we limit ourselves and then we go, you stop me. Yes, when I was a kid or when I was growing up or when I was 20, 21, possibly I allowed people to stop me. And I had to learn the things I had to learn along the way. But now, you know, I'm my own boss. It's interesting.
Yeah, you're the boss of you. I'm the boss of me. Be like we were three again. I'm still
looking for the one. I mean, I haven't given up on that. When they put me in a box and I'm 6 feet under, then it'll be over. But until then, not.
So when you say the one, you're talking about a partner, like a love interest.
I am. Absolutely.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Absolutely.
So how do you go about doing that?
I keep meeting people in real time. It's quite funny. And he'll probably never listen to this. I was in my brother's, I've never talked about this. I was in my brother's store down in Soho in New York. And I'd taken the little girl, woman, whatever you like to call it, from my building. She ran the building. She was 20 something. And I'd taken her down so we could have a style appointment and get some clothes fixed up for her. And when we got there was nobody there and there was nobody looking after us. And I was pissed and I threw like a tantrum and this guy came up to look after me. And I was fuming. But there was some part of my brain that was going, wow, this guy's really nice. Anyway, we kind of hang out. We've been hanging out together for about the last 3.5 years. He keeps telling me, I'm not your boyfriend. I said, fine, I'm not your girlfriend. So there's been other things in between, but he's 36 now.
Yeah,
but it doesn't make any, sorry?
I'm not your boyfriend. Well, I'm not your girlfriend either. So I love that.
But the age, it's nice here. In England, we're much more ageist. I think that's my experience. Here, nobody cares. Yeah. So we've been hanging out. And I'm actually just trying to write an op-ed for the New York Times. And one of the things I put in it was that, obviously, during COVID, I ate more than I should, you know, and we all got our COVID belly. And I said to him one day, I said, you know, I put all this weight on, do you mind? Does it matter? And he went, no, people vary. It was so gorgeous when he said that. And then he sat down and puffed his belly out and said, look, I've got a dad bod. And I'm like, yeah, really. It was so cute.
You know, so, I love that. It's like, you know, when I read your book and talking to you now, first of all, know the history of where you come from. And like you said, even though you did have a lot of money, it doesn't matter if you're not happy, you're not happy. If you live in a life like that, but I just admire you just seem so happy and lively, and you know, just from the stuff I've read about you online and talking to you in your book and things like that. So I really admire that about you. And I hear so many women that, you know, even younger than me, who will say things like, well, I just can't do that because I just can't. I'm too old. Or, I'm not going to be water skiing anymore like when I was 20, probably, because that's a lot of work. But there's always things you can do with technology and just so many things now that you don't have to give up.
But isn't there also much more a trend, tell me if I'm wrong, of people who've been in long, long, long marriages suddenly waking up and going, oh, you know what? I don't want to be here anymore. You know, of people who've been married for 20 and 30 and God knows how many years, and they're like, I'm out, I'm done. Because we put up with a lot of stuff that we now sort of kind of, I don't know, the climate out there, something's changed. We don't have to put up with that anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Oh no, I was one of those married 20 years and I thought, oh my gosh, I can't do this anymore. And a lot of women on my interview, on my podcast after 20, 30 years of marriage are like, I've got to figure out who I am and do this on my own. Well, our time is almost up for the interview, for talking with you. Really fun topic. But before we go, and I'll put all the stuff down in the show notes where people can find you. I know you've got a website and stuff like that. But grab the book, seriously. A memoir by Elizabeth Green, Why She Was Not in the Script. I love, love, love your style of writing. It's
Thank you so much.
Free flowing, and it's just like you're having a conversation with people the way you've got it sectioned off. I love it. So get the book. I'll put the link down in the show notes below. But before we take off, is there anything else that you would like to say or add before we go?
No, I think the only piece that popped into my head when you were talking is obviously I have my down moments. I have my in the dumps moments, but what it is I've got better at not listening to my mind telling me how terrible everything is. It's like I have to manage myself better.
Yeah.
And I have to eat clean. That doesn't help me if I don't.
Yeah.
And I have to be nice to myself. I have to be kind to myself. And the biggest piece about meeting somebody ever, ever, ever is you need to love yourself first so you're lovable.
Yeah.
And we don't like ourselves a lot, so kind of that would be the only thing I would want to say.
Well, I think those are great words of wisdom, seriously, to end on. So thank you, Elizabeth. It was a great conversation, and to everyone's listening, have a fantastic day. Many thanks to Elizabeth for joining us today on Women Over 50 Alive Redesign. Check out her book, Not in the Script, which I post a link to down below in the show notes. Also, I'm going to encourage you to become a podcast ambassador. What is a podcast ambassador, you ask? It is your financial support of only $3 a month for all this goodness for this DIY independent podcast. Okay, friends, until next time, stay awesome.